Hi, this is Sugandhi Iyer for the Good Fortune Show. Welcome back. Today we have Ms. Maidriya Von Nolan. She's a PhD, works both as a spiritual teacher and in private practice as a psychologist. And she is the author of an amazing book, Into the Heart of the Infinite. Miss Maitri, how do we pronounce your name, and how would you introduce yourself to this audience?
My name is Maitri Ma, and I am a psychologist and an author of spiritual and yogic books, and also a teacher in the yogic traditions.
Ms. Maitri, from what I understand, that you want to bring people into the awareness of divine unity and love. Is this the main purpose, or is this one of the purposes? Would you like to talk about what it is that you wanted to bring to people through this latest book, Into the Heart of the Infinite?
Yes, Into the Heart of the Infinite. The subtitle is A Spiritual Memoir of an Extraordinary Mystical Journey. And I put it forward because I feel that sometimes by hearing other people's stories and other people's journeys, it really helps us to resonate with our own journey and to bring our own spiritual mystical experiences forward and be able to acknowledge them. In today's world, there's so much pressure for all of our material activities and extroverted activities that sometimes our own spiritual journey gets ignored. And sometimes reading somebody else's mystical experiences and journey helps. It helps in a way, a story. You know, there's teachings, but then there's story, and we all relate to story. So this is trying to bring that forward in that way. Your first question about what is my real intent in what I do, both in my writing and in all of my work, really, and in being here, is to assist people in their own journey of spirit, to find the deepest love and connection to the divine unitary whole of being within themselves and within all beings, and to feel the connectedness to life, to all living beings, to love.
Maitri Ma, for people who are ignorant about this subject of unity and divine consciousness and being part of the whole, for those people, how would they possibly even start their journey when the whole world is busy trying to show everybody here on this planet, on this divine planet, the whole world is trying to show that there is separation, that we're not one, that we are all competing with each other, rather than acting as a united whole? What would you say to people? How would they even start the process of realizing that they are one and not buy into whatever is being sold to them?
Well, through deep contemplation and meditation, it offers an opportunity to really be discriminative in our thinking and feel into that which is most important in life, that which is really significant. You know, the mind is like it has layers, and on the outermost layer, we're dealing with our senses, right? And we're dealing with all of the input from the world around us. But then there are deeper layers. There's the layer of thinking and analyzing and emotion and feeling. But then beneath that, there's deeper layers of the mind that the yogis call the bliss layer, ananda. And that's where you have the sense of the God self and of the unitary whole of being, the consciousness that underlies everything. And if we spend a lot of time out in that external world, at that external layer, we can lose sight of the deeper layers of our being and our unitary wholeness. And unfortunately, our society has become very material and very superficial in a lot of ways. And so there's a lot of focus on competition, on aggression. And there's a great tragedy in human society because of this. But it doesn't need to be, and it can change. I think we're in the process of it changing, the process of discovering a new world, a world that is does not have these problems, a world where people are more conscious, more aware. And we're in the process of making a transition from one age to another. Some people call it like to the fifth dimension. Some people call it to the age of Aquarius. People say it in a lot of different ways, but we're in a transition. Human society is in a transition. And when there is transition, a lot of times there's polarization. You have all the people who are trying to, you know, save seeds and save the planet and really be conscious of all living beings and live to support all living beings. And that's the way of Dharma. And then there's people who want money and power and exploit human society. And there's more polarization between these two right now and some shakeup. But that's a natural part, Sugandhi, that's a natural part of transformation and transformation from one level of operation and being to another level of operation and being. And as a society, I think we're in the process of that transformation. We've always had wars. We've always had greed. We've always had the lower propensities of human existence. They've always been there, but now it's in a different stage. Yeah.
So my question to you is, there are probably a few people like you that are even operating in the world and trying to spread this message of divine love and unity. I know in India, for instance, there are a lot of people who are into that, but they keep it to themselves, or they could be found in some caves or hills and mountains meditating. Yes, I'm sure it adds to the whole peaceful atmosphere of the world because their meditation is going to help the world. But there are maybe a few of you who speak for truth, who speak for divine consciousness and unity, and maybe many of the opposite type of people, you know, the polarities and the exact opposite of you and the exact opposite of you could be existing. But how would you say, would a few good people be able to shift the negativity that so many others are bringing to the world? For example, being at war instead of talking it out. Yes. Being at war instead of negotiating, being at war instead of being concerned about the people of the other country, correct? When people go to war, then they're not concerned about the health and welfare of the people of their competing country, but instead become completely divided. So would you feel, and this is very important, and I want to bring this out to the audience over here, would you say a few words encouraging people to become more united in divine consciousness so that we could have more people of that nature rather than the opposite?
I feel that we all have this love within us. We love our children. We love our family. We love our parents. We love the people. We love our dearest friends. But what is that love? Where does it come from? When you take time to settle into yourself, to feel your own feelings, and to feel your own restless pain and what you really yearn for in your heart. You may find that this infinite love is there. And when you move deep into yourself, deep in your connection to eternal source, and you start to bring that love to the surface, you can find your soul in there, in that deepest love. And when you find your soul, you find that your soul is no different than the soul of every other living being, that we share a unitary base of beingness, of wholeness. There is a love which is universal and is the very nature or essence of our being. It is truth, love, and bliss. And understanding that, it gives you something to hold to in the storm of life and something to inspire you to have kindness for the troubles and difficulties of other people. You know, so many of the wars, if people would just talk to each other, they'd find what they had in common with each other rather than trying to kill each other or harm each other. There's been so much emphasis on territorialism and acquisition over the love of people, animals, plants, all living beings. But we have an opportunity, each of us, to begin to change that by finding that heart-centered connection to the one in ourselves. And in that, all people are our brothers and sisters, not just the people of our particular group or our family or our clan or our country. Everybody is a part, not only the people, but the animals and the trees and all of life. This whole planet is a part of that whole. And we have an opportunity to support that. And so when you wake up to that idea of wholeness and that we're all connected, it's an interwoven, interconnected wholeness of being. And when you wake up to that idea, there is the, you know, then look around you. What, no matter how small, maybe you're just going to plant seeds and save seeds. Maybe you're going to just recycle. You're going to get an electric car. Whatever it is that you can do for the planet, for the wholeness. When you go to the store, just saying a kind word to somebody else in line. Just random acts of loving kindness. And just opening your heart to that. To nurturing the whole planet and all living beings, then you become part of the solution, not part of the
problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we can all do that. And you may think, oh, what does it matter? This, all I can do is this little thing. This is a huge problem. You know, how am I going to help the people in Gaza when all I can do is this little thing, you know? Or how am I going to help anyone who's suffering in war and difficulty, you know, how am I going to help when I can just do this little thing? But everybody doing their little thing together, millions of people begin to make an entire revolution of consciousness. And that's what's really we're in the middle of. We're changing. And each of us has an opportunity to be a part of that change.
My question to you is, for those who don't know how to contribute, would even the fact of not buying into the negativity shown on TV and radio and books, would that even help? Because let's say they decide, you know, instead of watching this really bad broadcast, I'm going to go and buy my Threes book and tune into that. For example, that could be a first step. And then raising their consciousness, because once they start reading the writings of somebody like you, who is from a higher consciousness state, they immediately start to vibe in your consciousness. They start to increase the vibrations to a higher level of purity. And then that would help them attract good fortune also, correct? Because I wanted to ask you, what does it feel to have the divine flowing through you and to see the magic that was manifested? And how does it feel to be part of that? Is it really awe-inspiring? And what would you say to people? You know, stop watching the negativity, the negative drama, and try to focus on something better and higher.
Yeah, we all have that choice. And when you do some reading, you know, when you have a little time, read something inspiring, watch something inspiring, just take a walk in nature and connect with the trees and the plants. Be with an animal and connect with it. Be with another person and connect with that person. It's bringing yourself into the moment of connection and being there in love. And we all have that opportunity every day. And the opportunity to fill our lives with inspiration to increase our ability to be present in love with others and with life itself.
So would taking up a good book of a high vibration be a good starting point for somebody?
I think that can be very, very helpful. I have a number of books out. And one is Living Love, the Yoga of Yama and Niyama, which talks about how to live in the world with taking the ethical principles of yoga for how to live a life in alignment with nature and the universe. And those can be powerful practices. But the book, my most recent book that just came out in January, is the Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. And that's really about my journey from mystical experiences of a divine presence when I was a child to psychedelic experiences and then into yoga and the whole path of yogic meditation, finding my own inner divine guide. And I think, you know, finding that resonance inside yourself, that guidance can come in different ways. For me, it came in a guide who eventually gave me the name Baba, said just Baba, that's all. But this guide, I saw all the divine qualities, and it was, I think, a great experience of awe to feel the holiness of divine presence. But that guidance can come in many different ways to people. We all have our unique way of connecting. But my book shows my journey and through this and finding my guide and the guidance I got, the help I got in my path, the struggles I went through, and then going to India to meet my guru and as a physical guru, and what that was all about and that journey and all the magic and mysticism that occurred around that. And from there to my own inner journey of divine love and really finding in my inner guide, the divine beloved, and the mystical connection in that infinite love to spread, to transform my whole relationship And this was really powerful for me. I think I had rejected the world for a long time, thinking, oh, it's so mundane and not magical, not mystical. It's, you know, depressing. And then I really, through my own inner spiritual journey, finally came to a place of really seeing that when I took that veil off, that this world is a place of great beauty. This is the manifestation of divine consciousness and form, and that the plants are vibrant, alive embodiments of divine consciousness. They hold a vibrancy of life in each cell, and the animals are divine beings, and that people have that divine essence inside of themselves, whether they know it or not, that everyone truly is a being of light in their deepest self, whether they have wandered from that or not. We all have that potential within us. And when you see that, this world that, for me, that had been so mundane became divine, became a place of divine presence and love, because it's the essence of what is. And when we begin to awaken to it and recognize it, it transforms what this world is. And for me, it definitely transformed what this world is for me, recognizing that all is the form of the infinite. And something that is a question probably in a lot of people's minds is, well, why do bad things happen then? You know, if there is a God, if there is a divine unitary wholeness to being, why do horrible things happen? Why is there suffering, right? Does that ever occur, that thought, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people think about that. Why is it that the good guy loses and the bad guy wins? This is the question that people come up with. I've been good. Why is it that I have to go through these things? So maybe you could shed some light on that?
Yeah, I think it's an important thing because, you know, we can become very disillusioned when terrible things happen in our life and we feel God hasn't been there for us. But I do think that what can happen is that as you go into that divine source, you can realize that the pain and the suffering, you know, it's like a yin and yang. In this outer physical world, we live in a situation of duality. And the Mother Nature doesn't put any of us as number one over everybody else. So there's this, you know, there's life, there's birth, preservation, and destruction, right? These three principles are always playing out in the material world. And so according to our karma, according to the reactions we have to past experience, we will experience certain things that may be really hard, really difficult. But if we take them as teachings, if we take them as a way of showing us, when that karma, difficult karma arises and hard things happen in our life, if we see it's a way to maybe redirect us from ways of looking at the world and creating reality for ourselves that doesn't really work. So if we've been very materially involved and then suddenly we lose all our money and our nice house and our car and everything and we go, oh my God, how could this happen to me? But maybe in it there's a lesson. I know a man who he's actually, he was an Indian man, but he lived in South Africa for a long time, grew up very poor, but became a millionaire, multimillionaire, and was very wealthy. And then but very spiritual, very in love with the divine, and had high spiritual experiences of samadhi and states of divine merger were common for him. He was very elevated soul. And one day, rather than God giving him everything in the world, because he was a very elevated soul, one day a situation happened where he lost all of his wealth, everything. He had nothing. And it was very difficult for him. Even though he was a very spiritual man, it was very difficult for him. But he came to understand. Eventually, he had to go through it, and it was hard. But he came to understand that that was a way that the divine was like sort of taking away his last attachment, because he had been very poor as a child. He had a great attachment to wealth. And when that was taken away, his final attachment was taken away that prevented him from really melting into that divine source. There's a story that's often told about a sadhu, a spiritual man who was, he had a cow. He was very poor, but he had a cow, and he loved his cow. And he got milk from his cow, and that's how he really survived. It was all that he had. So Lord Krishna came to this man, and he visited him. And he bowed down at Krishna's feet and said, "Oh, Lord, you've appeared before me." And Krishna said, "Please bless me." And so Krishna put his hands on the man's head and he blessed him. He gave his blessing. And then as Krishna walked away, the man's cow, his only treasured possession, suddenly died. And he didn't have his cow, this one and only thing. He said, "What kind of blessing is this? Right? You've taken away my only treasure." But it was Krishna's blessing that he had removed this man's final impediment. And of course it was difficult because he was attached. But then as he grew past that, he began to realize he was free. He was free in the love of the infinite. And so we never know what is really good for us, what is really to our detriment, and what is not. And in the play of life, things go on. It looks like those who are mean and harmful and aggressive win, but do they really win? I think sometimes it's that we don't see the larger picture, the picture that is more than the moment, more than the time, and deeper. So there's a certain mystery to it all. And it's very hard to really judge what is truly bad for us and what is good, because what is good for us is not always what is comfortable. And right now, as a planet, to move out of darkness into light, out of the war and all of the things that have horrible plagues to humanity, to move into a place of deeper love and connection, that transformation of consciousness brings up the shadow material. They say, before the sun rises fully, the shadows get longer and darker, the brighter the sun is, right? But as the sun continues to rise, finally the shadows recede. The same is true in human life and in human society. And so it's very hard to judge in a moment. But sometimes when you don't have anything out there to trust, you can learn to trust within. You can learn to trust the infinite inside of you. And so I would suggest when hard times happen, just to be open. Know it hurts, but be open. Life has both pain and joy, and they both are our teachers.
So yeah. In your journey of divine love, is there anything that you can help people with regards to good fortune and manifestation? Because from the story of Lord Krishna blessing, but then, you know, because I come from India, we have many, many stories on Lord Krishna about how a poor friend visited him with hardly any gift. He had very little, I think, rice or some such thing, which he gifted Lord Krishna, who was also a king. And who was also of a very, very wealthy level and in palaces, etc. And Lord Krishna took this poor gift from this poor person. But by the time the poor person went back home, he found a palace and jewels and a lot of wealth. So Lord Krishna is also known to have blessed people with infinite wealth and beauty and abundance, because he's known for his abundance-mindedness. So how would you compare the story of the cow and losing the only possession that he had with the fact that Lord Krishna also rewards? And when we say Lord Krishna, we mean God in any custom or religion over here. We don't mean to sell Lord Krishna right now. But how would you take that? Isn't that also divine love, where God provides abundance?
Yes. And I've actually found that in my own life. By following my dharma, by following my calling, and doing this work for my inner divine guide, that I've done, I found that things just fell in place and you know, things came to me. I'd never tried to get money in any way. I really not focused on it, but things just came to me, you know, and my home and many things came to me. And so it does work the other way too. And I think it just depends, you know, what the path is for each of us can be uniquely different. And in fact, when you're in harmony with the universe, I think the universe does provide what you need. What you need may vary. For one, maybe they do need a palace. For another, maybe they need very, very little. You know, so what we need is given to us, maybe not what we want, but what we need, which may be abundance, and it may be that type of grace into abundance. If the man, he gave his only possession to Krishna because he was so devoted. Krishna, of course, like you said, is just divine being. It's a symbol of manifestation. And then from that, this man gave everything in devotion. And from that, the divine gave him back abundance in his life, even in his physical life. And that does happen, I do believe, because that was appropriate for that person. We're each unique flowers in the garden of the cosmos, you know, and what's appropriate for one, what happens, maybe not the blessing. Blessing may look very different from one to another. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does make sense. For one person, it could be losing the attachment to that cow, or to another person, it could mean when he is giving something to his divine friend, who is God, something that a rich person would normally not accept, but it shows God's generosity also. So when you say, when we move into the heart of the infinite, then in your book, when we move into the heart of the infinite, or we seek it, we start to seek it after we see some of the things that happen in the world. So one good place to start would be to start seeking the infinite. What would you say to that, and how does it connect to your book, The Heart of the Infinite?
To stop seeking the infinite. Well, you know what? How it does connect. It very much connects to my book. But the thing about seeking is that when we're seeking, we're desiring. Most of life, we're trying to get what we need, what we feel will make us safe, and we're trying to push away all those things which are, you know, fearful, scary, physical ailments, all the problems. We're trying to run from those and run towards abundance in whatever way we've manifest that, whether it's in physical wealth or whether it's in prestige or power or family and loved ones, you know, whatever it is that is our karmic desire, right? So we're always trying to move towards that which will, and physical health, we want to move towards that, and we want to push all those things that harm us away. But ultimately, in this push and pull, attraction and aversion, it doesn't work. Ultimately, it doesn't work. But if you really love God, if you really love life, if you really love the infinite, it stops being this grabbing. And when you grab, it just runs through your fingers, because the little ego self can't contain the infinite. So eventually, the seeking, which the word seeking implies, I am there to acquire something, right? And it's not an acquiring. It's a letting go.
I'm so sorry. The seeking, what I meant was a spiritual journey, starting one's spiritual journey towards the infinite. So that's the seeking that I was talking about.
Okay.
But of course, you know, people in the material world would be seeking something else.
Yeah. So seeking, well, when we try to acquire, the way away from that, the real journey that I've found is in letting go. It's in surrender. It's in letting go into divine grace, letting go into the will of the infinite, letting go into love unbound. It can't be contained. You can just let go into it. And for me, that was the learning process, is to learn that. To learn that it's a process of letting go, letting love in, surrendering to love, just opening your heart and feeling the love that's there and allowing it to be there, allowing divine grace to be like a gentle rain that falls upon you and just embraces you in that gentle rain of unconditional love. And to do that, you have to take off the umbrella of ego. You have to take down that umbrella of ego so that you can let that rain fall on you, that rain of love. And so that's where the work is in taking down that umbrella of ego. As long as you have pride of yourself, well, I did this and I did that, or you feel bad about yourself, oh, I'm no good because I can't do this or that, you're in the ego. You're in the small self, in the I and mine self. And when that begins to collapse, you collapse that umbrella of ego and you let that larger self, that divine self, that rain of infinite love fall upon you. Then, and you let it be, you let it in. That is the way that I found works. And deep meditation is a way to connect with that. For me, I searched in psychedelics and I found that universal consciousness in the oneness of all being. And then I searched in meditation and I found the beloved in form as my divine guide, my inner guide who showered immense love on me and who I felt embodied divine qualities and left a sense of awe for me in the grace and beauty of infinite being. And I'm saying that's not something I could acquire. It's something that is, and all I could do is let go and let it be.
And for the people listening over here, and for the people who are going to be downloading these shows, the recordings later on, if a person connects this to good fortune, then understanding that this journey of that we're having or that you're having and allowing the divine love in is also allowing good fortune in. And remember, the little mind could even say, for some people it might say, oh, I'm so great, but for some other people it might make them feel undeserving. But when one opens up to divine love and the divine consciousness that Maitreya here is talking about, then what happens is one could actually feel more confident and motivated in life. What do you think, Maitreya?
I think absolutely. I agree. Because as when you're in the ego self, there's the maybe pride, but there's also the, oh, did I do that right? Maybe, you know, all of that self. But when you sort of let go of that and you're just like, there is this flow of love and I just want to move in it and allow it to manifest through my actions, then it's like, I'm not great. I didn't do anything great. I'm not small. I am connected with the whole of life and love. And in that connection, I'm kind of dissolved into it. And so there's no place for it to land. So maybe you make a fool of yourself. Maybe, you know, maybe you do something that people admire. It's grace, right? And with that, there, I think that a kind of confidence, if you call it, maybe.
Confidence that doesn't come from our own, you know, I, the big I, right? And not from the me, but it's a confidence from belonging to the whole, being part of the whole, or having the whole trust, I mean, you know, having the whole give you what you were always meant to be.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's the big, you've just said it. You've really said it. That's what you're meant to be. It's what you are deep inside. You're already that. It's just recognizing it. The plant is already an vibrant embodiment of divinity and love and life. It's recognizing it. It's being connected to it. Otherwise, we just walk through the woods and what do we see? Nothing. It doesn't matter to us, you know? We don't, because we're not present in it. But when you go, whoa, wait a minute, here I am. Look, I'm surrounded by vibrant life, living beings, tasting the sun, moving towards the sun, appreciating the sun, the air. Vibrant living beings, embodiments and manifestations of the creative life of the universe. It's amazing, right? The mundane and ordinary turns into amazing. And so in this way, we can become present with divine consciousness in ourselves and in all the life around us. And find the love that's there. And sometimes when we go into like deep meditation where you kind of quiet the thoughts a little bit and your mind becomes a little bit relaxed and you feel the white light or the presence of the infinite, you feel the love, then you really can sink down in that meditation into the samadhi, into the ananda, into the bliss of being. And you feel that. And when you feel it, it rejuvenates you. It rejuvenates you physically. It rejuvenates you mentally. It rejuvenates you spiritually. It's like this shot in the arm of spiritual light and energy. And it gives something to you. And because you've been exposed to something of a higher frequency than perhaps you normally feel. And so those samadhi states, those states of divine absorption states of rapture, some people might say, or awe, they begin to make your whole vibratory frequency, even your physical cells, change. And it creates a vibrancy that is more than has been there. And so every time you have that kind of deep exposure, that mystical exposure, it's a tremendous healing to body, mind, and spirit, because it brings you into alignment with the higher frequency and the totality of being.
For everybody listening over here, to actually have someone like Maitri talk to you about her experiences, and to know that not everybody has these experiences in this world. Most people are having opposite experiences. But to be able to connect to somebody like Maitri over here, and also maybe work with you, Maitri, is there some way that people can reach you if they want to buy a book or work with you? Because do you still do work as a psychologist? Any contact information, anything that you can help people with?
I do work as a psychologist, and I also work as a spiritual mentor. And I help people with their meditation practices and their spiritual life. I can be reached through my website, which is yogama.org. Yoga, Y-O-G-A-M-A. .org, yogama.org. And you can sign up for my newsletter, and there's a little space below where you can write me a note. I do have satsangs I am open to the public in, and I have one this coming Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning Pacific Standard Time. that will be online. You can go on my website and sign up for it. It's free. And I have a mentoring program for people who are interested in studying with me. So that's, you can, and if you write to me, I'll write back to you. So you can write to me on the sign up sheet. Just, there's a little area above if you have any message for me. Okay.
And we will have you back on future shows if, you know, you have the time to come and talk to us. But how do they get hold of your book right now? And
yes,
what is it that they can look forward to? Because we really want people to understand that life is not what it shows itself to be. Life is so much more. And by connecting to the divine consciousness, one can manifest pretty much anything that they want to. And you're talking of good fortune, being in divine love, divine consciousness, whatever it is that somebody feels that they want. What would you say? How would they get your book?
My book is available through my website, but it's also available on Amazon, as are my other books. Living Love is also available. I have another one, Dharma for Awakening and Social Change. So my books are all available on Amazon. And Into the Heart of the Infinite, I feel it's very personal to me, and I feel it's my heart going out to people And I do think the people I've heard from who've been reading it, I've gotten a lot of feedback that it's been very meaningful in their own journey and their own connection. So it's at available Amazon. You can get it at local bookstores. If they don't have it on the shelf, you can order it. It's available through bookstores. It's ebooks and books, and soon there will be an audio book, but not quite yet. So that's pretty much how to reach it, either at yogama.org or Amazon. So
can we have you back on future shows?
I would
love to hear from you, because I feel that, yes, we did learn from you, but we want to talk more about all of this that you brought up today. And, you know, we're at the end of the show today, and we will be meeting again next Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, for the Joyful Manifestation Show. But until then, we want everybody to decide what it is that people are seeking. Do we want to just believe that this world is only what it shows us to be, a dark, dense physical world? Or can we go further into exploring the divine consciousness and all that is? And Maitriji, before you know we wrap up, anything you want to say to people?
Yeah, I think so. I think as a closing message, what I'd like to say is follow your heart. Find the love within you. Find your own soul, your own spirit, and your connection to the infinite. Because it's there. It's in your own nature. You already have it. All you have to do is tune into it. Okay?
This is I feel that connecting with somebody of very high vibration, such as you, has witnessed, who has observed and experienced all of which that people have only heard about. And I think connecting with somebody like you is almost like having a key that can open up the lock to divine bliss and to take that step forward and to reach out to Maitriji and to definitely read her book and explore this fantastic universe that even scientists are acknowledging exists. Yes. They know it's not a limited world any longer, and there is so much more that we can learn from. Maitriji, I just want to thank you for coming today and sharing with us your experiences, and I'm wishing you a fantastic, fantastic journey forward. And I'm wishing everybody here, all the audience, a fantastic rest of the day. This is Sugandhi Iyer signing off for the Good Fortune Show. And Maitriji, would you like to say good night?
Good night to everybody. It's been a joy. And good night to you, Sanjay. It's been a joy to be here with you.
Thank you so much.